Meryl.
Israeli just does that. I want to.
Good morning. We'll be starting momentarily.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Shem Yehud Kachari Huish in David, Kiluverhimu Utilu Utiluverhim, Leakta, Lashem Yudhe Bavate, the Yehuda, Shalim Beshem Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La Sok Torah Mitzvah, Vahino Amadunai Lohino Elena Maseya Deno Kanone Elena Maseya Deno Kanonehu. And the energy of the Aleph is?
Oneness.
Oneness. Unity. And the energy of the bed?
House.
Very good. And the energy of the mem? Water. Correct. And the energy of the resh?
Yes.
And? The resh. One of its energies is the head, and one of its energy is lack, poorness. And the energy of the hay?
World. What was that?
Worlds.
Yeah, world.
It can be either the world of that is coming, Olam Haba, or the world that is here, Olam Asiya, the world of action. But it can also be other worlds. And the energy of the Ayin?
I,
correct. And the energy of the Dalit, the doorway. The energy of the Lamed,
Lucy.
The energy of the Lamed is teaching.
What?
Teaching.
Teaching.
Education. The word Lamed means a teacher. And the energy of the Gimel? This is your favorite one. The energy of the Gimel. The energy of the Gimel is the camel.
Oh, yeah.
And it has two sounds, so it's one hump camel or two hump camel.
The one hump camel?
There is a one hump camel. And you see people riding on it, you wonder why.
Have you ever ridden a camel?
No, I have not.
Oh, wow.
They say that's almost comfortable to be behind the head. It's really writing on the deck.
Like why?
Sitting on it.
Well,
she's adventurous. Adventurous. Okay, I don't think we have discussed the letter of the Vav, have we?
No.
Okay. So we're on slide 74. The letter we're talking about is the Vav. But you're used to pronouncing it Vav. Is it a V or is it a W? Nobody wants to answer because there's a machloket, a disagreement over the sound of the Vav. And that is the Sephardic pronounce it Vav. And the bless you. Don't worry about it. Just do what you need to do. You're not disturbing us. The letter of the Vav, the letter Vav by the Ashkenazi is pronounced with a V, Vav. The question I asked myself is the letter Vet, the Bet that has the two sounds, Bet and Vet. Why would you need another sound, another letter that had the same sound of the V? To me, it doesn't make sense. So I try, but I was trained, I was taught as an Ashkenazi. So when I read the Hebrew, I hear the V. But I strive to start to make the habit, replace the V from the Vav with the W, Vav. And you, when I'm praying on Saturday morning, you may hear those differences. But it's hard to break a habit, especially a habit of what, 30 years, 50 years, depends on how you want to count my study of Hebrew. The Hebrew letter Vav is the sixth letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It is a letter that makes the sound of V or W. It can also serve as a vowel holder, where it can make the sound of O or U. Does anybody understand the term vowel holder? What does it mean? A vowel holder can be a Vav, it can be an Aleph, or it can be a He. These letters, when they are vowel holders, take the sound of the vowel. They're really a way of in English, we would put an apostrophe. L'chadlik ner Shabbat is the blessing for lighting candles. But when you write it in Hebrew, the lamed has the two dots underneath, the shva. And then there's a hey. Lehadlik. That hey takes the sound of the vowel, because the hey tends to be, said it's almost silent. It's not, but it is. But when you spell it in Hebrew, in English, how do you spell it? You spell it L-E-H? No. It's L apostrophe H. It's telling you there's a vowel there. It's telling you there's a connection. How do you read Lamed, L apostrophe H A? Laha,
It's barely a vowel.
Barely a vowel. It's a very short vowel.
Big on the schwa. Yeah.
All everything has a schwa.
Yeah.
The last letters in Hebrew words, if it's a hey, it's silent. But every letter in Hebrew has to have a vowel. That's what he's saying. You have to put the shva, the two dots that are silent, on that last letter. If it ends with an aleph, you have to have a shva. If it ends with an ayin, you have to have a shva. These are silent letters. But if it ends with a kaf sofit, it can have the shva in the kaf sofit, and then it ends with lech, ech. But if it has the little t, it's cha. One is male and one is female. We'll get into that when we start to sound out the words themselves. Now, I want you to look at slide 75. And you see the three. You have a resh on the right, a nun sofit in the middle, and the vav or the wav on the left. Trudy, you see the three.
Yeah.
They look very similar, don't they? How do you tell the difference between a wav and a resh?
Horizontal.
It's just longer.
That's how
the top part is longer.
That's how I would know.
That's literally all it is. It's very hard to tell the difference. Some of the fonts, that length is clear. And when you see them next to each other, it's clear. But if you're reading the word and you only have the one letter, is it a resh or is it a vav? And you're going to have to learn to distinguish that size. The nun sofit is easier because it looks like the vav, except it goes below the line. In this case, but when you're drawing it or when you see different fonts, it may not have the dent. Yes. Exactly. Going to the next slide. The vav, and we're at the point, we have now learned 13 letters, or we're in the process of learning the 13th letter. Now, it wasn't learned in the order of the alphabet, but we're halfway through the letters. Do each of you have a siddur at home? Okay.
I don't have a siddur, but I have to.
A what?
The one that we have?
Yeah.
Here. What do you call it? Beach. The Maxor? No, this is the
Maxor.
Five books of most that I have.
You have a Chumash.
That's the exact same one.
Okay. You have a Chumash.
Chumash, that's it.
Yeah, I'm just, because we can start to try and read, even though we don't know all the letters, we can start to try and read it at home to pronounce it, and then if you'll bring it with you next time, I want you to ask Judith that you need to take a book, and you'll take it and you'll bring it back each Saturday.
Okay. So,
but you'll be able to bring it with you here, and we'll practice with it.
Okay.
So if you'll bring it next week, we'll start to read from the Siddur. It can be a regular prayer book, or it can be a good morning, doing well. It can be a regular prayer book, it can be a chumash, it can be whatever. Okay. So, I have a Sephardic prayer book that I could bring, but, you know, I'm not sure you want to practice on a Sephardic prayer book. Now look how the Vav is spelled.
Vav.
But if you pronounce it Wav, you have a W and a V sound. And when you spell out Hashem's name, I'm going to go slow. The Yud is spelled Yud Vav Dalet. But I should say Yud Vav Dalet. The hey, we discussed, it can be spelled three ways. Hey Yud, or Hey Hey, or Hey Aleph. The Vav can be spelled three ways. It can be spelled Vav Yud Vav. It can be spelled Vav Aleph Vav. Or Vav, Vav. And then the final hey, again, three different ways. Now, what's the difference if you spell out Hashem's name that way, in all these different ways? The difference is the gematria. One way of spelling the letters, total 72. We all know what 72 connects to the 72 names of God. 72 connects to the Sephirah of Chachma. You change one letter. Instead of a Yud, the Vav being spelled by a Yud, it's spelled by an Aleph. Means there's number nine less. 9 from 72 is 63. 63 connects to this Olam Haba, the world that is coming. It connects to the Sephirah of Bina, of understanding. If you spell the Hays with Aleph and not Yuds, the Gematria is 45. 45 is the Sephirah of Zeranpin, which consists of six. Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. Altogether, they are called Zeranpin, meaning small face. In a different spelling, the number is 52, and that connects to the Sephirah of Malchut, the physical world. Yud, Hey, Chachma, Bina, Vav, Zeranpin, Malchut, the physical world. It's a way to understand the code that's built into the name Hashem. Now, there's another combination of where you spell the hey one way and the vav another way. And you can spell the hey with a yud in the upper world, the first hey, the last hey, you spell it with an aleph. It becomes 58. 58 connects to the Hebrew word ozen, which means ear, which means balance, which means hearing. You think 3,000 years ago that people knew that your ears was what creates the balance in your life, in your walking? As people age, what happens? Inner balance problems could come from the inner ear. All of these things are built into the Hebrew alphabet. Everything is in the letters. The more you learn about the letters, the more you ask, why is this letter sound like this? You can also ask, why is the letter shaped like this? But there's a machloket, there's an argument, but not an argument for no reason, not an argument to be right. A machloket means an argument in search of truth, an argument for the sake of Hashem. The argument is, do we accept the shapes of the letters as we know them, as we've been taught them, as we see them in the Torah, or not? Is there metaphors to those shapes? Remember, the letters are made from other letters. I haven't really dwelled on that because as we go through this, it becomes difficult. But when you look at what is called the Torah's font, it's called the Asherit. The Asherit script, when the scribe is making tefillin, or the mezuzah, or the Torah itself, he or she has to write the letter in certain ways. If he writes it differently, if he doesn't start at the top but starts at the bottom, if he makes a yud, because every letter starts with a dot that becomes a yud, and then he finishes the letter, all of that is built into the shapes of the letters of the Asherit font, the Asherit script. There are crowns. If you've ever seen the Torah scroll, there are crowns on the letters. Some of the letters have no crowns. Some of the letters have one crown. Some of the letters have three crowns. Never is there a letter with the two crowns except for the letter Bet. And that's only in the first letter Bet in the Torah. The two crowns has a different meaning, having to do with the 7,000-year cycle. It tells us that the Torah in this 7,000-year cycle is the second cycle. If we need to have a third cycle, then there will be three crowns on the Bet to tell the people of that of those generations that it's the third cycle. Every Torah is identical in the way that the letters are the same, the way the letters are made are the same, the ink that is used is the same, the parchment is prepared in the same way and made the same. There are 42 rows in each column. Each column starts with a vav, except for six of the columns. And they always start with the same six letters. Yud, bet, yud, he, shin, mem, vav. But that last vav is not a vav. How can I say that? Looks like a vav, sounds like a vav, is a vav, but it's not. Because the Torah tells us that these six letters are not vavs. They start the column, but they're not this. There's a reason, there's a metaphor, there's an explanation. Essentially, if I read those letters properly, bet, yud, he, with the name yud, he, which is part of Hashem's name, then the next two letters, shin mem, means name. With yud hey name, but the vav at the end of a word means it's a possessive pronoun of his. The other vavs are not his. They're connecting vavs, and when we'll talk about that in a minute. But bet yud hey shin mem vav is a healing sequence. The healing sequence is with his or in his name, Yud Hey. Healing comes from the upper worlds. Healing comes from Hashem. He authorizes doctors to heal you. He authorizes doctors to create through medical technology, different forms of healing. But the healing doesn't come from the doctor. It doesn't come from the drugs. It comes from Hashem authorizing you to be healed. People don't know that. People forget that once they've learned it. I've told it to you. You know it. But you'll forget it by tomorrow. Because that's the human being. You have to be reminded all the time. Healing comes from Hashem. That's why in our synagogue, our custom is to say, after the Mishnah Berach, which is the prayer of healing, to say, El Na Rafa Na La. These are 11 letters that Moses said to Hashem regarding his sister Miriam. She had said Lashon Hara. She received the disease of Tzarat, which is spiritual leprosy, for lack of a better translation. And Tzarat had a very clear method of healing when there was Hashem was face to face with us. When the temples existed. But that method of healing was a long, drawn-out process. But when the tzarat was healed, when the leprosy went away, it still took 7 days for the leper to contemplate where he or she had said Lashon Hara, evil speech. Today, we don't get spiritual leprosy. Why? Because everybody says Lashon Hara. Doesn't mean that it's not correctable. It doesn't mean that we have to. But I can tell you, because I've admonished people privately and then had to do it publicly. That's Lashon Hara. Whatever statement that they made, that's Lashon Hara. Lashon is speech. Hara, the evil speech. Lashon Hara, I would say to somebody, that's Lashon, what you just said is Lashon Hara. And their response is almost predictable. No, it isn't, because I'm telling the truth. No, it isn't, because I would tell it to that person if they were here. We all do it, but it doesn't mean it's right. Is society correct in everything that it does? Is society better today than it was 1,000 years ago? These questions can and should be asked. Is society getting better because of the Me Too generation? Because for thousands of years, men have physically dominated women and taken advantage of that. Does that mean that because we've made it public, it's better? Obviously, it needs to stop. It needed to stop 3,000 years ago. Men are very slow in learning. You can say it out loud.
I don't want to be told they're not right.
No, that they want to be told they're right. They don't want to be told that the other person is right. The next slide. You see how the Vav is spelled. The two Vavs. But remember, there's three ways. There could be a Yud between the two Vavs. It would still be pronounced Vav or Vav. You can put an aleph between the two vavs. It would still be pronounced vav or vav. Or just the two vavs by themselves.
But two vavs before. Is the last one always going to be
in modern Hebrew, two vavs in a word is a W. You have to understand that modern Hebrew is not biblical Hebrew. Modern Hebrew is not biblical Hebrew. Modern Hebrew was a recreation of what I'm going to say a few people, but it was really just one man who was instrumental in the early 1900s in recreating speaking Hebrew. And he was an Ashkenazi. He came from Russia. He immigrated to Israel and part of a kibbutz, and he documented the modern words. So electricity, there's no electricity in the Bible. So he used the word chashmal, which is a word that's used in Ezekiel's vision of the storm. He knew that lightning is electricity. So he took that word. But in other cases, he would spell the word in Hebrew letters for the telephone.
I mean, he would write telephone.
Correct. So modern Hebrew. And in modern Hebrew, there is no W sound if you're Ashkenazi. So his answer was to get a W sound, he put two vavs into the words. Right next to each other.
My English is the same thing. Two V's make a W.
Correct.
and in German, what we call, what we pronounce as B, so when you look at Volkswagen emblem,
right,
correct, either way.
Understood. It's human beings are predictable. And we think we're not. That's our ego. The next. The sixth letter is the Vav. And it has the sound of a V or a W or an U or an O, depending on where the dot is, where the vowel is. Now, to learn to write the Vav, it's really the easiest letter to write. It's one simple stroke. Start near the top center of the space. Make a short section down slightly and to the right, and then straight down to the bottom. But in reality, most people write the Vav just as a straight line. They don't have that little bit at the top. And that just makes it more confusing to the Nun Sofit, which is a straight line down. Do you have any questions about the letter Vav at this point? We're not finished with the Vav, but it's hard to really explain it. But I want you now to go back to the Aleph. The Aleph is composed of two letters, right? It's composed with a diagonal Vav, a diagonal line, and a Yud going up and a Yud coming down.
A Yud, did you say?
I said a Yud, yes. You look at it, you don't see the Yud. Do you? You see one Yud, but not the second Yud. Could you say that's a short Vav, upside down? Okay. Now let's... The gematria of the Vav is 6. If we accept that Trudy's perception is correct, it's 2 Vavs and a Yud. 6 + 6 + 10 totals 22. The Aleph includes the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. You see that? Now let's say I'm right that it's 2 Yuds. 6 + 10 + 10. Gematria is 26. 26 is the gematria of Hashem's name. Yud is 10, He is 5, Vav is 6, He is 5. 10 plus 5 is 15, plus 6 is 21, plus 5 is 26. Unity is Hashem. Both of our perceptions are correct. Both are describing unity, correct? The letter Bet. Look at the letter bet.
So, it will switch that Christ, God's name. Because
tell me what.
We're practicing and we would probably be afraid to take that one if we have to.
First off, you don't have to throw the paper away. You can find any synagogue and you can insert those papers in the bottom of the synagogue, of the ark, where the Torahs are. And eventually, someone in the synagogue will run out of space and they will make a ceremony. They will take everything that's in that space, which is papers that are being thrown away, but have Hashem's name, so they can't be thrown away willy-nilly, because it's a dishonoring of Hashem's name. So they will take it and bury it in a Jewish cemetery. That's called a geniza. You've heard about the famous geniza from Egypt, where it was unearthed in about 1700s. And all of these papers were found in the geniza. They hadn't decayed because they were buried in a way that they wouldn't decay. Basically, a wooden box or something that kept them from decaying. And some of them were burned in the fire because the geniza was really a building. For how many centuries were they throwing things away with Hashem's name on it or with Hebrew letters on it? And it's a tremendous trove of archaeological artifacts and information. What do they find? They found the receipts from the synagogue. Somebody got paid. They signed a receipt. Who cares what the receipt is? The letter Yud, the letter He, the Vav, and the He are on the paper, so they can't be thrown away. Who gets paid from a synagogue back 3,000 years ago? 2,000 years ago?
Rabbi?
The rabbi got paid? The teacher got paid? The cantor got paid?
Can't take it. Can't take it.
The maintenance people. They got paid? But there's one person that they didn't know who it was.
Yeah.
No? The priests don't get paid, not in the synagogue, unless they're a rabbi. No.
Hashem.
The translator got paid. When you read the Hebrew, at the beginning when the Torah was first given, they spoke Aramaic. They didn't speak Hebrew. It was too holy to speak. So as the verse was read from the Torah, it was translated by the translator. But it is said and described by writings of the Second Temple. What that translator was doing was satire, political satire. He would make up stories about modern people. For us, it's a history. But he would make up stories. Or maybe he was telling the truth. But the translation that he spoke came from the Torah. He was translating the Torah into the language so that people would understand it. They didn't have printed paper like we do. I'm sorry? The public probably earlier couldn't read, but eventually the Jews have always emphasized reading, because they needed to read the Torah. But, you know, relative to the rest of societies, there was, they all read, they all, except the girls were not taught until the late 1700s, early 1800s, when the Bet Joseph schools were developed for girls. But the idea of the translator doing satirical satire against the king, against the rabbi, against whatever, he had free rein to say whatever he wanted. Yes, Court Jester. Very good. And there's a reform rabbi from a little bit more to the Orthodox side. But he started an organization, and he's promoting it through the Reform movement and the Renewal movement. And what he does is he has a troop of players who sit in the audience, and as the story gets to that place in the Torah reading, they stand up and they do satirical translations of what's being said. It's very funny, very, very entertaining. And in the Orthodox community, they'd be aghast because there's no sound in the Orthodox communities when the Torah is being read. But the Reform movement, there's not that much emphasis. So they stand up and they're doing a dialogue, four or five people, back and forth, and the people have to guess who are they representing. It's very funny, very entertaining. I recommend having the experience if you ever are able. They travel from city to city, and they contract. They are based in New York. They put out an email, but it's the email isn't really doing that kind of material.
Just to sum it up, the dog has no. What the other letters have some.
I'm going through it. What I want to do is go through it. And if we have time, I'm not sure of the time yet. Yeah, we still have a few minutes. If we go through it, the Gimel. The Gimel is made up of a Zion, which we haven't covered, and a Yud. It's a Zion that's on an angle, and a Yud that's supporting it from falling over. So Gimel is the camel.
It's made up of
a Zion. And a Yud. The long line coming down is a Zion. And the little leg going off to the left is a Yud. Look at the Dalet. Some say that's two Vavs. Some say it's a very unique letter. It's its own letter. There is not, it's not composed of the other. Look at the hay. The hay is a Dalet and a Yud. Or it can be a Dalet and a Vav. Or it can be a Dalet and an Aleph. The Vav is a unique letter. It's the straight line. The Zion, as I said, it's a Vav going down. I didn't say this yet. A Vav going down and a short valve or a yud at the top. And we can go through each letter as we learn them. From now on, I will try and explain the shape. But as I said, there's a mechlocket. There's some say there's no meaning to the shape because there's a Paleo-Hebrew. There's prehistoric letters written on caves that are like pictograms, and that they evolved into the letters. But all of the Torahs have been in this Ashurit script since the beginning, since Moses made them. There is that one of the scrolls that Moses made. He made 13 scrolls, whether it was in the 40 years that he was traveling or whether he made it in the last day of his life and miraculously, because it takes a scribe anywhere from 1 to 2 years to make us a scroll, to make a Torah. So if he did, whether he did it in the last day of his life or he did it over the 40 years, he made 13 scrolls, one for each tribe, and one was put in the ark. So when the ark is found and the ark is opened, we will see the original lettering. And tradition teaches that it's the Asherite script. It has not changed.
So, years ago, where Noah's ark was built there, more recently, it was the Ark of Covenant.
Correct.
And
I've heard the theory.
And one theory, I think, that it's buried
underneath the temple. And there's another theory that it's in the army. It's in an army storehouse somewhere. That comes from the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I was picturing some Israeli.
The Ark was not in the Second Temple. It had disappeared. It was always in the Holy of Holies. But when the First Temple was destroyed, it disappeared. It was not taken to Babylonia. It wasn't there. It wasn't in the Holy of Holies. No one knows where it is. But it will be returned for the Third Temple. That is the tradition. That is the story. That is what the observant Jew has accepted as truth. Remember, never believe a word I say. Prove it for yourself. If you go and Google Ark, you'll get a lot of Christian views on where it is. You may have heard of the gentleman whose name was Jones. I'm not talking about the Raiders of the Lost Ark. I forget his first name, but he spent his life, wasn't Jewish, but he recognized the concept of the Noahide, the righteous Gentile who follows the 7 Noahide laws. And so his work was to find the ark. And so he did a number of excavations following the hints that he found throughout his studies but he never found the ark. And then you'll read on there that some have said he did find it, but it's he wasn't given permission to reveal where it is. And he's passed away about 5 years ago. One of my students, as part of her process, she and her husband both converted at the same time. And as part of their search for truth, they followed this gentleman and his teachings all the way. And the basic premise is no idol worshiping, which means that they had to give up the connection to the man from Nazareth. But that was part of their step-by-step process. Does anyone have any questions? We only covered the letter Vav, but you can see how important the letter Vav is. It's used throughout. The thing that I didn't cover and I do need to cover. In the Torah, the Vav means ant. If you have a Vav at the beginning of the word, it means and, A-N-D. It's a connecting word. It's a connecting letter. It connects you to the previous word. But if you look at the various parashiot, the various weekly sidras, many of them start with a vav, telling us that this weekly energy is continuing and is connected to the previous section, the previous story, for lack of a better description. That is one meaning of the Vav. It means and. But there's a more comprehensive meaning, and it's really very difficult to explain unless you understand that Hebrew has verbs that conjugate. So if a verb is past tense, the Vav changes it to future tense. If it is future tense, it changes it to past tense. Vayishlach, Vayeshev. These are just two of the parashas that start with the Vav. Are they connecting to the previous one? Or are they changing the past to the future? Vayishlach means, and he sent. Vayeshev, and he sat. Both past tense. But if you change it to the future, the translation is, and he will sit, and he will send. Which is it? We have a tradition that says, what happened to the fathers will happen to the children. That's on both a micro level, on our personal levels, and also on our global levels. You see the rise of anti-Semitism today. Okay? There's always been anti-Semitism. It started with Cain and Abel. Cain hated Abel. Why? Did he have a reason to hate Abel?
Jealousy.
He created a reason. He was jealous. Is that a reason? Or is that a creation of a reason? Some people say he created it. Some people say it's a reason for it. and therefore anti-Semitism is not a creation of man. Some say he did create it, and therefore anti-Semitism is a creation of man. Hashem. Everything comes from Hashem. Well, there's a difference. The Sefer Yetzirah, there's a difference between creation and formation. Only one thing was created. That's the desire to receive. Then everything that's created, what we call created, everything that became part of the world, the earth, the universe, was formed from that one creation. Different levels of desire to receive. But we're out of time, and you're going to find that I've given you more words for thought.
I'll lose it.
You have a beautiful evening, beautiful day.
Thank you.
Shalom to all.